The reading is Psalm 127. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labour in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their enemies in the gate.
Thank you very much, Linda. I want to begin today, in fact, at the temple, at the Jerusalem temple. In Mark chapter 13, you may remember this moment, there was an occasion when one of the disciples, who was bubbling with enthusiasm, said to Jesus, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings." And it is very obviously true. You can still see some huge stones today. The ones that are left are not from the original temple building that was completely destroyed, but from the foundation, the platform on which the temple and the entire temple courts stood. Much of that platform is still there. The stone that this man is looking at in the photograph is calculated to be something like 80 tons. In weight, and there are stones going up to 300, 400, 500 tons, I believe. Some astonishing stonework was put up there. It's impressive to look at now. Back then, I think it was breathtaking. And it wasn't, of course, just the stones. The temple itself had meaning way, way beyond just the architecture. So that disciple was definitely voicing what everyone felt when they went to the temple. There is plenty more evidence of that in the Bible, just a very quick tour of one or two, mainly in the Psalms. Psalm 27, "One thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and seek him in his temple," because the temple was synonymous with God's presence. Psalm 84 is another psalm with the same idea in it, taking it further. "How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord Almighty. My soul yearns, even faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God." And also Psalm 122, "I rejoiced with those who said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord." Now that psalm brings us back to the pilgrim psalms. These psalms that we are looking at over these few weeks, the 15 psalms between number 120 and number 134 inclusive. These are the psalms it is thought that people would sing, the pilgrims would sing, when they were on the way up to one of the major feasts, the festivals that took place during the year in Jerusalem. And they were songs, quite likely, songs to keep your spirits up as you travelled on the road, as you trekked slowly up there. But now it is thought this psalm perhaps marks the moment when you have arrived. You've got sore feet, without a doubt, but you are there. I'm picturing a look on your face a little bit like Keely Hodgkinson when she won the 800 metres in Paris. Do you remember? You are gazing up at the temple and there are tears in your eyes. You're full of emotion. The things that are going around in your head and in your heart, just a deep love and fondness and a sense of awe and all kinds of memories and nostalgia and happiness filling your very being. All your life, you have done this. You have come up to Jerusalem for the great times of celebration. You've made this pilgrimage, and your parents and your grandparents before you. Now, daily life is lived out in a village somewhere, but holidays, literally holidays, holy days, are here. This is what holiday means to you. This is the place of dreams. It's the place of your deepest longing. You belong here, and it belongs to you. This psalm is attributed to Solomon. And we know that Solomon was, of course, the original builder or the organizer of the building of the original temple right back at the start. I do like to think that quite possibly when Solomon was overseeing the building of the temple, he might have had these words in his head every morning when he went out to inspect the work. The opening verse of this song that he wrote, "Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain." It's interesting, though. We are gazing up at the temple, and I've linked this very strongly. I'm suggesting a strong link with the temple in Jerusalem. But this psalm quickly turns from that and comes home to each one of us. It takes Solomon's macro question, if you like, and makes it into a micro question, a micro scale challenge for all of us. It is about your place, your house, your home. Who is the builder of your home? Now, I'll show you why I say that. Let's just skim very quickly through the psalm and see the themes and the lessons that are there. Verse 1 sets the theme, first of all, of course, the theme of the psalm, and it's cast as a challenge, a question, or two questions, which are really the same one. Stop and think, ask yourself, who builds the house? And then it gives a second angle, who watches over the city? But the psalm could still go in any direction from that. It could be about the temple. It could be about the life of the city. But then we get to verse 2. And verse 2 is suddenly different, isn't it? In vain you rise up early and you stay up late. It's about you and the patterns of your life, and it's about your daily routine. Do you work long hours? Does your work become toil? Because the word toil is there later on in that verse. And perhaps it doesn't now, but did it in the past? Or is there a risk of that happening in the future? So there is a focus now on the nitty-gritty of your daily life. And then, coming to verse 3, the numbers there are the verse numbers in the psalm, 5 of them in total. Children are a heritage from the Lord. So now it speaks of family. It speaks very clearly of family, and it says, in effect, family means blessing. It uses the words heritage and reward. These are strong words. In verse 4, the language seems to shift, and we have battle language. But in fact, that's figurative language because it's still talking about the family. It speaks of a warrior whose children are compared to arrows. And so the implication is family means security. And verse 5, again, it speaks of a warrior in battle. The word actually is warrior in that verse, and it pictures him defending the city with his sons. Although there is a word there for gate, but it could also mean, and it's often, people have often said, it could equally be marketplace or court. So we might be thinking about the field of commerce or the field of law, the law courts. But whichever it is, the point is the same. They will not be put to shame. So the implication is family here is linked with honor. These are strong statements, three of them. Family being linked with blessing and security and honor. I'm very conscious that straight away I need to add a very big caveat to these words. We need to make one or two comments kind of in parentheses as we engage with what's here. Because for so many of us, in fact, if we are honest, for all of us, those things are not necessarily fully true, are they? They are simply not necessarily the case. Family is not always a place of security. For some people, sadly, it has not been. And it's not always a place of blessing. and not always a source of honor. So we must remember this and remind ourselves of it, because it's very true. Our families are all, without any exception, struggling. The word struggling families is sometimes used to apply to a certain small sector of society. All of our families are struggling and are under pressure and are under attack. And we live in a broken and fallen world with many forces which are actively and almost openly against the family and the survival and the structures and the habits and patterns of family. And also it comes home to each one of us, because we are also broken and fallen as individuals. There isn't a mum or a dad or a brother or a sister or a daughter or a son in the whole of human history who has got everything right, with only one exception, and that is the Lord Jesus himself as a son and as a brother. And he did, but apart from him, none of us. But remember this, and take hold of this as well. The Bible very often speaks of things not as they actually are, but as they are meant to be, as they are intended and planned and designed to be. God's plan for us, God's plan for you, is that your family, whatever shape it is, whatever stage it is at, your family should be increasingly a place of security and a place of blessing and a place of honor, because those are the things he designed and intends family to be. His will for us all, his very real desire for you, is that those statements will become truer, perhaps just bit by bit over time, that our families, whatever damage they may have sustained and however much of a disaster we sometimes feel they are, our families do grow closer and closer, ever closer to what is encapsulated, what is pictured in those three statements, in the last four of these five verses of this psalm, focusing on family. The more, I'll be honest, the more I reflect on this psalm, the more I think that it perhaps contains for us one of the Bible's core statements about families. And yes, it's true. You could, of course, write verse one up in kind of wrought iron above the gates of a building site for the builders to see every single morning as they clock in for work. But even more so, you could take those words and frame them and put them on the wall of your kitchen or by your front door or somewhere. And in fact, I believe some may well already have those words up there in their house somewhere. People do. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Now I'm going to cut to the chase, really, because the principle is very, very clear. The principle is easy to work out. But what about when it comes to seeing that it happens in practice? How do we make sure that it is God who is building our house? And incidentally, I suppose, is there a risk that we might claim that he's the builder, or that we might actually honestly believe that he's the builder, when in fact, long since, way back in the past, we cut loose and set up on our own as independent builders, and we haven't really realized it? That might also be a possibility. Now, I think you could look in all kinds of parts of Scripture for the answers to this, but I'm looking right here in these Psalms, not only this one, but in these in these pilgrim Psalms, this one and the others that are nearby. Some simple points. First of all, get real about who God is. Get real about who God is. Now, I'm looking now at the very opening line of the next psalm, Psalm number 128. It does look as if these two psalms go very closely together. Solomon may well have been the author of both of them. The style and the subject matter are pretty much identical and they do go very well together. Psalm 128 begins simply with this: blessed are all who fear the Lord, who walk in his ways. You will eat the fruit of your labor. Blessings and prosperity will be yours. So it refers again, just like in Psalm 127, to labor, to work. But you will benefit from the fruit of your labor. So it won't be pointless toil. If what? What's the conditional clause? If you fear the Lord. Fear the Lord. That word fear, you will have heard many times before, does not mean fright. It doesn't mean a kind of mindless terror. It means holy reverence. Knowing God for who he is, a God of justice, a God of vengeance, of course, ultimate vengeance, but his vengeance, not ours. A God who will have the last word and who will punish all wrongdoing. A God who in every single respect is as far and as high above us as the sky is above the earth. One suggestion on this would be to get to know the Psalms. Get to know the Psalms even a little better than we do. There's some work there we could all do. The Psalms are transparently honest. Here is Psalm 2, which is spoken to arrogant kings and rulers. And it says this: the one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Be warned. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. How do we dare approach this God casually? We sometimes do, don't we? It is a grave mistake. Or here's Psalm 50, a very different tone. This is a psalm spoken to God's own people. It's in his voice, spoken to his own people. When we think we're doing him a favor, oh, God needs me. God needs me to pray. Oh, God's lucky I turn up to church every week. Don't be deceived. Oh, no, sorry, wrong one. Psalm 50. I am God. I have no need of a bull from your stall. In other words, I have no need of your sacrifices. If I were hungry, I would not tell you. There isn't a relationship between us and God in which we are doing him a favor by the things we do or bring or the devotion that we give him. And I jumped the gun, this next one, Galatians 6, verse 7. Paul warns his readers, don't be deceived. God cannot be mocked. We must not imagine we can two-time God. We need to give up the idea, which is probably lurking in our minds, the idea that we can somehow pull the wool over his eyes and that there are some things he will not see. Get real about who God is. And also, it goes with that really, the other side of the same coin. Get real about who you are. Looking on two or three psalms to Psalm 131. Now this is where we'll be next week, so I won't spend any time on it now, but it speaks very strongly to this question. My heart is not proud, O Lord. My heart is not proud, O Lord. I do not concern myself with great matters. There is a lovely childlike simplicity in the words of that psalm. It's a beautiful humility. I think we can talk like that only if we have accepted the truth that we are mere creatures in the palm of the hand of our Creator. We are contingent. We are dependent on factors greater than ourselves, namely our God. Isaiah 40 says this. Isaiah 40, verse 22. He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like, anyone know? Well done. Grasshoppers. The people on the earth are like grasshoppers to him. That puts us in our place, doesn't it? Do you see what I'm pointing to here? We will more readily submit to the master builder, to the chief foreman, to the designer, to the architect. We will more readily submit to him to take his rightful place in the construction of our lives and our home and our family if we keep firmly in our minds who he is and who we are. And the third one, get real about who God is, get real about who we are. Very simply, stop trying to be Superman or Wonder Woman. Back to Psalm 127 again, today's psalm. In vain you rise early, in vain you stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. This focuses on our self-regard, doesn't it? Our self-regard, our spirit of independence. I can do this. Which is an instinct that is there somewhere in all of us, in all of our hearts, deep inside. We must beware, because so much of our self-regard is vanity. The word vain or vanity appears in this psalm, doesn't it? It's interesting. This was a learning curve for me. If you look up on the internet the word vanity, the screen immediately becomes filled with pictures of vanity stations, vanity tables. I didn't really know this. Perhaps some of you do. Vanity is an interesting word. There is a verse in the Bible where that word appears 5 times. A verse that has only 8 words in Hebrew and 5 of them are vanity. So if later on this afternoon you're just waiting for the kettle to boil, look up Ecclesiastes chapter 1 verse 2. Ecclesiastes 1 verse 2. It says this in Hebrew. This is what it says. Vanity of vanities, says the teacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. 5 times in one verse. That might be a record, but please don't quote me on that. The word vanity can also be translated breath, vapor, meaningless, pointless, useless, futile. We have to step back for a moment, I guess, and realize this. It doesn't mean that we are wrong to build buildings and to take care over the quality of the building of our houses. It doesn't mean we're wrong to take care over the quality of all we do for our homes and our families, of course. Just as that verse 1, the second half of it, doesn't mean that we are wrong to post watchmen on the city walls if there is danger and threat from outside. And it doesn't mean that we are wrong to work hard when we need to. The mistake must be to do those kinds of things trusting in our own strength and our own ability and our own ingenuity. We can keep our cities safe. No, you can't, says the Old Testament. Leave me alone, I can do this, we say in our hearts. No, you can't, says Scripture. That's vanity. Going about our lives, trusting in our own strength and ability and ingenuity. Do you notice how it says this in verse 2, uses the phrase toiling for food to eat, and then when you would expect it to say, don't worry, he will provide all the food you need, it doesn't say that. That's the theme later on when Jesus is talking in the Gospels, in Matthew and in the Sermon on the Mount, but not here. It goes on to say, he will give you the sleep you need. So the focus here is on rest. The focus is on rest and trust. So I think very simply, there is a compelling word for all of us, for each one of us in these verses, but maybe especially for you, if you have any history at all of going without sleep, either because of worry or because of the need to work. Any history at all of going without sleep, make it your aim to try not to. There might be all kinds of vanities in our lives, but this is certainly one of them. A very simple action to close with. Or two things you might do. Get hold of a couple of postcards, and on one postcard write this verse, 2 verses from the New Testament, The first one is this, John chapter 15, verse 5. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Another verse which puts us in our place. Jesus spoke those words to his disciples, all his disciples throughout all time. Apart from me, you can do nothing. But then balance that and get another postcard and write this verse, Philippians 4, verse 13. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. All that I need to do, I can do through him who gives me strength. Make those two into something that is up there on your mirror or on the wall somewhere or on a kitchen cupboard. Apart from me, you can do nothing. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. Let's turn to prayer. Gracious God, we